Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's September the 25th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news, WRDA has passed the Water Resources Development Act that will update the locks and dams on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. It's headed for the president's desk. He has threatened a veto. Brazil says the latest U.S. WTO offer is a positive move. And on that note, acting U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Chuck Connor has cautioned the Senate not to increase the level of WTO-identified trade-distorting support. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and from the state statisticians from Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, and Indiana. They'll update us on harvest season progress. And then, just after the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast, but we won't stop there. All this week, as you should already know, the Closing Market Report is an hour long. In the second half hour today, we'll talk with Kevin Kelly about the Prairie Ensemble. And Jim Hires and Andrea Rondell of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank will join us too. They have a machinery need to fill at the food bank, and we just might have something up our sleeve that could be good for the food pantries in Eastern Illinois and the farmers' back pocket. So stay with me on that one, because it's pretty early in the brainstorming process, but I'll need your input at about 3:15 on this hour-long Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible with support from Cargill, featuring pro-pricing grain contracts, a marketing program providing a variety of contracts designed to fit a farmer's performance goals and risk tolerance. Information on the web at cargillpropricing.com.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat at $8.73 and a quarter, 8 and a half higher for the day. March futures at $8.69, 6 cents higher. December corn at $8.87, rather December wheat in Chicago at $8.87 and a quarter, up 9 and a half, and the March at $8.92, up 8 and three quarters. May futures there at $7.93, up 10 and a half. Those first two contracts, of course, happened to come from the Kansas City Board of Trade. December corn futures in Chicago, $3.71 and three quarters. Down a penny and three quarters. March futures at $3.87 and a quarter. They were down 1 and three quarters for the day. And the May contract at $3.96 and a quarter, 2 and a quarter lower. December at $4.14 and a quarter, down 2 and one half. November soybeans, $9.73, down 5 and three quarters. January's at $9.89, down 5 and a half. And the March contract at $9.96 and three quarters, down 6 for the day. November beans next year, 5 and a half cents lower at $9.36. Bean meal futures, October's at $2.71.40, 20 higher. December's at $2.77.60, up 50. October bean oil at $36.64, down 67. December futures at $64 lower, traded to $39.19 for the settlement price. October live cattle at the Mercantile Exchange, settlement price at $97.57.5, 7.5 lower. December futures down 27.5 at $100.50 for the live cattle. September feeder cattle at $115.82.5, down 32.5. The October's at $116.75, down 17.5. October lean hog futures, $61 settlement price, down 52.5. December down $1.02.5 at $63.30. And the February lean hogs at $67.22.5, down 32.5 for the day. Outside markets, November crude oil futures, $1.45 lower at $79.50 a barrel. The CRB index at $331.71, down 2.04. The dollar at $78.32, down 0.22 at this hour. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,766 is just about 8 points higher on the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
And tell me about the numbers in Chicago.
Well, you know, we started the day out here. Looked like we were going to see some harvest pressure. Looked like about what we should expect this time of year as we wind into, the middle part of the glut of harvest. And then the wheat decided to take off and thin trade generated by the screen trade. Not much at all, very quiet all through the day at the floor itself, Todd. And that wheat run on up there and challenged the old contract highs, actually made new contract highs in the July wheat. And we sat there and we pulled the corn and the beans reluctantly higher on the day, and it looked like we were going to trade there. And then in the last 15 minutes, why, as wheat fell apart, we come back to a little harvest hedging in the corn and the beans, Todd.
What are your expectations for the rest of the week? Can you?
Well, I think, you know, we've got the supply demand or the supply stocks report here on Friday. I think we, you know, we saw some early numbers out on that. It's going to chop around, and we're going to see, you know, maybe as some of this rain comes across, a little harvest delay. But all in all, the ground is so dry over here, we could get an inch of rain and be back in the next day. So I think we're going to continue to see a little bit of harvest pressure, a little bit of chopping around. You know, we've talked Egypt supposedly is maybe going to be in to buy some more wheat. Algeria has bought some wheat today, but there was a big commentary about whether that will actually be pulled from here, because I think it was U.S., but optional origin was a possibility. And figuring the freight rates, unless they change a lot, why that could change and come out of another area later in the year that way. China is going to sell 1 million metric tons of corn and 200 metric tons of veg oil to their interior, to the interior, just into the people there, out of the government stocks, trying to ease the food costs and the inflation for that over there. That gives a lot of people a feeling that they won't be in the export market for corn. But as we know, China a lot of times just happens to do things later down the road. So we think they will be back in the export market, the corn, later.
All in all, it looks like demand will stay strong for all the commodities?
Demand is staying very strong. Of course, you know, as we talk about that, there again, the dollar, a little lower again today. One of the negative things in the outside market, so is the crude oil, was it's down $1.50 as we speak. And we watched the oil collapse towards the end of the day, and the bean oil, as we talk about it, down 64, too, Todd. That was one of the things that pulls back. Stock market just hanging in there, down 12 points. Not anything in the way that things have been going along right now, but the crude oil back under $80 is good for all of us people burning gasoline.
And we appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Tuesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Ed Kieser will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. Our own Dave Dickey, Director of Ag Programming, is here now to take a complete look at today's agricultural news. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
In agricultural news, the Senate overwhelmingly passed the Water Resources Development Act on Monday, sending a bill authorizing $23 billion in water projects to the president for signature. The bill expands and upgrades locks on the Upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. In all, the bill authorizes 900 projects and studies. Senators passed the bill by a veto-proof 81-12 vote. Earlier, the measure passed in the House by a similar lopsided margin. National Corn Growers Association President Ken McCauley.
The president has threatened to veto, but we think that would be a mistake. We've worked really hard on this. It's vital to our nation's infrastructure, agriculture. A lot of consumer goods go up and down the river, construction supplies. And we think it's just really, really vital to the rest of our infrastructure and our transportation system. So the president has threatened that. We hope he'll see the light and come around and sign the bill.
Lawmakers from both parties say they could override a presidential veto. Brazil's foreign minister says the latest offer from the U.S. to cut annual farm subsidies down to $13 to $16.4 billion is a positive move. Washington World Trade negotiators previously called for a subsidy ceiling between $17 and $22.5 billion a year. emerging market countries, notably Brazil, Russia, India, and China, met yesterday in New York to discuss the Doha round ahead of the annual United Nations General Assembly this week. Acting USDA Secretary Chuck Connor Monday cautioned Farm Bill senators not to increase the U.S. level of WTO-identified trade-distorting support.
I can assure you that we are going to continue to work with the Senate to advocate for policies that put the American farmer and rancher on a strong competitive footing while ensuring a very strong income safety net. I will press the Senate to begin markup, which Chairman Harkin has signaled he intends to do within a few weeks, perhaps as soon as next week. The President is eager to sign a farm bill this year. I will do everything I can to ensure that a farm bill will be passed that he can be proud of and delivered to his desk that he can sign.
Connor says Senate considerations that would peg direct payments to commodity prices might be considered trade distorting by the WTO. Connor says if a world trade deal is reached after the farm bill is signed into law, the federal government might have to reopen the farm bill to comply with WTO mandates. Argentina will track corn grown from recently approved GMO traits to ensure it does not get exported to the European Union. A resolution published Monday in Argentina's official bulletin says seed distributors can only sell GMO corn seeds to producers who have made a sworn statement that the seeds are destined for domestic consumption. And China says it will auction off wheat, corn, and soy oil from its state-owned reserves in coming weeks in an effort to stabilize volatile food prices. Analysts say China will sell 1 million metric tons of corn from state reserves in the domestic market at below market prices. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you of two things. First, this is an hour-long edition of the Closing Market Report. Stay with us right through the 3 o'clock hour. Secondly, visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says the cowboy and the plowboy should make nice.
The farmer and the cowman should be friends. Oh, the farmer and the cowman should be friends. One likes to push a plow, the other likes to chase a cow. But that's no reason why they can't be friends. Those lyrics are from one of the many memorable songs written by Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein for the 1943 musical Oklahoma. The song continues, "Territory folks should stick together, territory folks should be pals." It depicts a quarrel between Western farmers who have fenced their land to protect their crops from animals and the cowmen who are used to letting their livestock roam the open range. The song could just as easily reference today's clash between farmers who are excited to see the rise in corn and soybean prices driven by the renewable fuels boom and livestock producers who are not happy about paying for more feed. However, crop farmers and livestock producers have more in common than they may think. For example, row crop farmers may not realize it, but they have a stake in defending livestock agriculture from animal rights activist attacks. Livestock producers will quit if they can't raise their animals according to good veterinarian science, both cost-effectively and humanely. Then there will be less demand for feed. That's important. About half of the U.S. corn crop, even with rising ethanol production, still goes toward feeding our nation's livestock. Lawsuits in Oklahoma, coincidentally, are aimed at having animal manure regulated as toxic waste. Producers would be liable under Superfund laws for millions of dollars in potential runoff fines. Sure, this affects poultry producers, hog producers, and cowmen. It also affects crop producers who use manure for fertilizer, including organic farmers. An effort is underway in Congress to clarify the Superfund laws were never intended to apply to farm animal manure. Another legislative effort, however, would not be beneficial. Some in Congress want to remove one word from the Clean Water Act, navigable. That little linguistic change would vastly expand the waters and lands that would come under federal oversight. If that happens, more farmers will have to get expensive permits. Whether they raise corn or cattle, private landowners would benefit from bills in Congress to give them incentives for protecting endangered plants and animals and their habitat, rather than penalizing them from having such species on their land. And back to biofuels. Some of the same laws that include tax credits and other incentives for ethanol and biodiesel production also include incentives for production of energy from methane. Wouldn't it be something if someday energy generated from manure was just as valuable as meat or milk? Livestock producers, too, have a lot riding on the growth of renewable energy. Rodgers and Hammerstein were right. With so many opportunities and challenges in common, the farmer and the cowman should be friends. They should stick together to increase profitability for all of agriculture. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just call us at 217-333-0850. Well, USDA's crop progress report for the week ending September the 23rd shows 80% of the U.S. corn crop has matured. 22% of that crop is in the bin, and that is between 8 and 10 percentage points ahead of the 5-year rolling average and last year's pace. 12% of the soybeans have been harvested around the nation. Not surprisingly, the Delta states lead the pack, with Mississippi and Louisiana over half done. 27% of next year's winter wheat crop is now in the ground. The Great Plains states are about half done with their wheat seedings, and 23% of the Nebraska wheat crop, that's in the Midwest, by the way, is up and growing. Now, here are the statisticians from Nebraska, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa with crop progress updates from their regions.
This is Brad Park, statistician from the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending September 23, 2007. Harvest of both corn and soybeans is underway. Early varieties of corn and lodged corn are being harvested first. The frost of a week ago accelerated crop maturation. Pastures are keeping up with grazing as areas receive timely rain showers. Livestock conditions are good. There were 5.2 days suitable for field work compared to 3.3 days a year ago. 85% of the corn has reached maturity, ahead of last year's 79% and the 5-year average of 73%. Statewide, the percent moisture of corn in the field is 24%. 7% of the corn has been harvested. The percent moisture of corn currently being harvested is 19%. Corn lodging across the state is 58% none, 27% light, 10% moderate, and 5% heavy. Corn condition rated 2% very poor, 6% poor, 20% fair, 51% good, and 21% excellent. Soybeans dropping leaves is at 83%, 6 percentage points ahead of last year, and 5 percentage points ahead of the 5-year average. Soybean shattering is 87% none, 11% light, 2% moderate, and 0% heavy. 11% of the soybeans have been harvested. Soybean condition remained unchanged at 1% very poor, 5% poor, 20% fair, 54% good, and 20% excellent. Again, this has been Brad Parks with USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending September 23rd. Corn and soybean harvest made excellent progress across the state as there was virtually no precipitation in the last 7 days. Near-perfect drying conditions existed in the fields as a result of steady winds circulating temperatures which averaged nearly 10 degrees above normal. Many corn fields are now being harvested at an undesirable 12 to 13% moisture, almost unheard of for this early date. But what's been favorable for corn and soybean harvest is certainly not beneficial to topsoil moisture supplies, causing some concern over if the seeded winter wheat will germinate in a timely fashion. Topsoil moisture supplies continued their slide and were rated 32% very short, 37% short, and only 31% adequate. The corn crop continues to dry down ahead of normal with 97% reported mature. This compares to 80% 1 year ago and 77% for the five-year average. 46% of the state's crop was reported harvested, which compares to 13% last year and was 30 points ahead of the 16% five-year average. Soybean plants in the shedding leaves category advanced by 28 percentage points in just 1 week and now stands at 87%. This leads to 58% 1 year ago and 64% five-year average. 22% of the crop has now been combined, and this leads to 4% last year and 10% five-year average. In other crops around the state, sorghum harvest advanced to 41% complete, well ahead of the 11% five-year average. And soft red winter wheat seeding is just getting underway at 4% complete. And finally, pasture conditions are still showing signs of drought-related stress, with 55% rated as poor or very poor. This has been Brad Schwab reporting for the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Steve Parn reporting Nebraska's weekly crop weather report for the week ending September 23, 2007. Corn conditions rated 82% good or excellent, well above last year's 61% rating. Corn harvested was 9%, ahead of last year's 6 and 8 average. Soybean conditions rated 83% good or excellent, well above last year's 60% condition. Soybeans harvested was 3%, even with last year but behind the 9 average. Sorghum conditions rated 85% good or excellent, well above last year's 55%. Sorghum harvested was 1%, behind last year's 3 and 5 average. Winter wheat seeded was 59%, ahead of last year's 53 but behind the 62 average. Winter wheat emerged was 23%, ahead of last year's 16 but behind the 28 average. Pasture and range conditions rated 63% good or excellent, well above last year's 19%. This has been Steve Parn of the USDA's NAS Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending September 23rd. Another sunny week with almost perfect harvest weather allowed farmers to keep the harvest activity ahead of the average pace. The corn harvest was only 4 days behind the record pace set in 1991. Some livestock producers continue to bale corn stalks and soybeans as forage due to short hay supplies, while other livestock producers have decided to sell livestock. Topsoil moisture was rated 38% very short, 31% short, 31% adequate, and 0% surplus. Subsoil moisture was rated 39% very short, 28% short, 33% adequate, and 0% surplus. Precipitation for Indiana ranged from 0 to 0.07 inches. Temperatures averaged from a high of 95 to a low of 38 degrees. For the week ending Friday, 7 days were rated as suitable for field work. 78% of the corn acreage is mature, compared with 56% last year and 60% for the five-year average. Statewide, 21% of the corn acreage has been harvested, compared with 5% last year and 9% for the five-year average. Moisture content of the harvested corn is averaging about 19%. The condition of the corn crop is rated 50% good to excellent compared to 73% last year at this time. 81% of the soybean acreage is shedding leaves compared to 54% for last year and 69% for the five-year average. 13% of the soybean acreage has been harvested compared with 2% for last year and 10% for the five-year average. Moisture content of harvested soybeans is averaging around 12%. The soybean condition was rated at 46% good to excellent compared to 77% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office. Thank you.
In about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast is next. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan has filed his response to a lawsuit filed by Governor Rod Blagojevich. The governor accuses Madigan of failing to call the Illinois House into special sessions that Blagojevich called during the long deadlock over the state budget. Madigan claims the governor called the sessions at inconvenient times to punish House lawmakers for not voting for his budget bill. Despite the litigation, the governor's office is traveling the state lobbying for House support of a $25 billion capital bill. That bill includes millions of dollars to renovate the University of Illinois' crumbling Lincoln Hall, which Deputy Governor Lou Anner Peters visited today. Peter says no one's enthusiastic about a decision to fund that bill through three new casinos and expanded gaming slots elsewhere, but she says taxpayers wouldn't be asked to pick up the tab. The House begins its annual veto session next week. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear an Indiana case challenging the state's voter identification law. Today, the court agreed to decide whether the law requiring a photo ID unfairly deters poor people and minorities from voting. The state's defended the law as a way to combat voter fraud. But the state Democratic Party, the American Civil Liberties Union, and other civil rights groups say there's no evidence that voter fraud exists in Indiana. The party argued that those targeted voters tend to be Democrats. Bill Groth, an attorney who's represented Democrats in the case, says the Supreme Court has guarded the right to vote more seriously than some lower courts. But Secretary of State Todd Rokita, a Republican and defendant in the case, says he's confident the law will be upheld. The woman who's been serving as the City of Champaign's assistant city manager has now been named to the post permanently. Dorothy David will replace Paul Berg, who left over the summer to take a city manager's position in Florida. Minor League Baseball could be coming to Champaign by 2009. The head of a sports consulting firm is working on a partnership with University of Illinois that would allow a Frontier League team to play its games at Illinois Field. A group of investors headed by Denver-based National Sports Services is seeking financing to expand the field to seat an additional 3,000 to 4,000 people and add other amenities. The company's CEO says the goal of their plan is to create additional family entertainment in the Champaign area. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. WillPledge.org. You know you wanna.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL Urbana. I'm Todd Gleason. Don Day is away this afternoon. Our own chief meteorologist at the WILL radio stations and the television station, Ed Kieser, is on hand with us today to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Thanks for joining us, Ed. We appreciate it a lot.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about weather forecast for the Midwest over the next couple of days.
Well, we're having scattered showers and thunderstorms moving across the Midwest, and for many areas, this is the first rain in about 2 weeks, and this is all ahead of a cold front that's pushing on through rather slowly. So tomorrow it'll dry out over the western and northern portions of the Midwest, but there will still be some lingering showers in Ohio and parts of Indiana and eastern and southern Illinois into Kentucky. And so the next couple of days, there will be some showers causing some brief delays to harvest operations. But after a generally dry weather pattern the last couple of weeks, this isn't going to be a big deal. I think we'll have drier weather coming back in for a couple of days at least following this front.
Tell me a little bit about that, too.
Well, it appears that Thursday and Friday we'll have dry weather across the Midwest, and most areas will stay dry into Saturday. Cool front is going to be entering western sections of the Midwest about Sunday, and that could trigger some showers and thunderstorms, mainly along and west of the Mississippi River. As that front pushes eastward on Sunday night into Monday, it appears right now that maybe the coverage and intensity of the precipitation will decrease a little bit. Bottom line is we'll have fronts starting to come through every few days that could cause brief delays, but I don't see any wet weather patterns sitting over the Midwest, so by and large we'll still have decent harvest weather, and temperatures will get away from the unseasonably hot weather we've had recently, but we'll still be running near to slightly above average on most days. We don't see any bitter cold coming in yet either.
That'll be really nice for the end of the week. There are some temperatures around the globe that appear to me that might be way out of whack. I was looking at Brasilia in Brazil and Cuba, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that one there as well. They were listing for later in the week, 109 degrees is their high temperature. What do you see in those areas?
Well, it's very hot and dry right now in northern Brazil, including the northern growing areas of Brazil. And I know that's got a lot of attention of people watching the markets, but I do want to point out that they are coming out of their dry season right now, so while it's hot and dry there, that doesn't really say too much about the upcoming planting season and beyond. Of course, we'll have to monitor that situation. That is unusually warm, but they typically start to see a turnaround here in the next month or so to where they start getting showers. So if it's not raining a month from now, that's when I'd say that there's really a little more concern about the situation.
Thanks much, Ed.
Have a good afternoon.
Ed Keyser is the chief meteorologist here at the WILL radio stations, AM, FM, and television. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. Stay with us. Another 25 minutes to go in this edition of the CMR.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at the University of Illinois, hosting a lifelong learning program developed specifically for adults over 50. Additional information on programs available by email at olli@uiuc.edu.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta now offers a private dining room for parties, meetings, and other events. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff of the Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report, extended to an hour all this week. Today in studio with us, Jim Hires is the executive director of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, along with Andrea Rundell, who's the director of agency relations. Thanks to the both of you for being in studio with us. We appreciate it a lot.
Well, thank you for having
us. Thanks, Todd.
Let's first make some comments up front because I'm talking to you at the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and I'm just appointed to the board of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. We want to make sure that everybody understands that. We'll probably talk a little bit about the United Way kickoff as well for their fund drive this fall. And I serve on the Campus Charitable Fund Drive Committee for this campus, where we're looking to raise $1.3 million from October the 3rd next week to November the 16th. And I served with United Way as a volunteer for a while, about 5 years, in fact, along with Andrea Rundell when she was employed there. But today we're going to talk about the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, what the food bank does and some of the service areas. And we have kind of something up our sleeve for the farmers to make sure that they understand that this is involved with them as well. But Jim, if you could tell me what the Eastern Illinois Food Bank is and who it services and where, those sorts of things.
Well, thank you, Todd. Eastern Illinois Food Bank exists to provide a source of food to those in need of emergency food through a network of food pantries, soup kitchens, and shelters through a 14-county area of East Central Illinois. 60% of that food comes from the donated food market, either on the local or national basis, and 20% comes through the federal commodity program and another 20% through a purchased food program. Those agencies, there are 200 programs that we serve in those 14 counties, reach about 36,000 people every month. To explain it simply, we're the people who put the food in the food pantry and the soup in the soup kitchen.
And you have a vested interest in a couple of things that farmers are interested in at this point. You've been watching USDA and the Farm Bill debates in the Senate and what's been happening in Washington, D.C. over the last several months, I take it, haven't you?
Oh, yes. We have a very vested interest in the Farm Bill on two fronts. One is obviously the food stamp program, which is a vital source for those in need within not just East Central Illinois, but the entire country. And the other is the TFAP program, which is the federal commodity program. And the farmers, as well as us, have a very vested interest in that program.
So the food and feeding programs out of USDA's dollars that would be coming towards the food bank, how much money might you be getting out of some of those programs over time?
Well, the TFAP program, how it works in this particular state, the Federal Commodity Program is a contract program between the state of Illinois, who gets the commodity through the program, and they contract with members of the Illinois Food Bank Association. There are 8 food banks in Illinois, of which we are one. And we are basically their contractor. They give us a stipend for distributing those commodities as they become available, and they decide the breakdown by county on how much of those commodities are delivered to each of those areas.
Then, Andrea, you're in charge of agency relations. I know that you've been tracking down food banks in Champaign County and all the rest of the counties that are in the service area for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. How many are there in total?
We work with about 200 different agencies and programs across 14 counties. If you're an individual The food bank doesn't work with individuals. We don't work with individual clients. We make sure that all of those agencies in all those areas that are trying to feed people are the ones getting the food so that they can get it done.
When you take a look at who's using the food banks, does it surprise you sometimes who might be in need of food over time?
It turns out in a lot of ways to be working people who are in need of food. Something on the order of 60% of clients are seniors and kids. Other folks are just people who are trying to make ends meet and finding it difficult right now to do so. And when they have to look at their budgets and decide, you know, where do we cut, where do we do this and that, food slides down the list. You have to pay your rent first. You have to pay your utilities first, or you're going to be without a place to stay. So food ends up being sort of the one place that gets cut and cut in budgets.
Jim, what is it that you need sometimes from the food bank? From the food bank side, I take it most of the time you're able to fill the pantries if you can get to them. You have the food availability that it comes in. What else might you need?
Well, you're right. We can fill the pantries if we can get food to pantries. And our agencies get food in two ways. We either deliver it, and 60% of all of the food that we distribute is delivered by us to a pantry. And then 40% of it's picked up. The problem that we run into is we have a schedule of deliveries, and oftentimes need within a given area doesn't match the schedule for delivery. So a pantry will find themselves short of food and need to come to our warehouse in Urbana. We have to remember that 60% of all of the food that is distributed in emergency food programs in this part of the state comes from the food bank. So it's necessary for them to get to us to make it cost effective.
And you distribute with just one truck?
We actually distribute with two trucks and a small van.
Two trucks and a small van, but you're on the road a lot, I take it.
We are on the road, and because those trucks also serve a dual purpose, because we get food from donors, we have to stop and pick up donations from local producers, local vendors, local manufacturers, and that truck may not be available to turn around and take another load out because it's tied up picking up donations.
So, Andrea, we've got a couple of ideas I think that we can put the farmers that listen to this program together with. We haven't really panned these out very much. I've been brainstorming myself.
Thinking things over.
Mulling them out. So what if we did this as a possibility? And I'll throw it out to you and to the farmers that are listening. Farmers have trucks. We know they have trucks. They have trucks with tarps on them in particular. I'm talking about your tandems most of the time. And if you live in one of the counties that happens to be serviced by the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, I'd kind of like you maybe to get hold of me here at the radio station. My address is tgleason@uiuc.edu, or you can call me directly at 217-333-9697. That's 333-9697. And after the harvest season, here's the deal. I'd like to get together maybe 5, 10, or 15 farmers, producers that have trucks. I think that the food bank can offer them a tax deduction for the mileage on the, and not just for your normal car, but for your big truck.
Right? We can, yes, we can.
And you can take it off of your, take that tax off of your taxes, or that mileage off of your taxes. When you come in, if you were to bring the truck that has a tarp on it, we'll bring it out to Urbana, to the Eastern Illinois Food Pantry Banks, or the food bank, and we'll fill it up. And then I will provide from the radio station and from the college, though I haven't talked to the professors just yet, some extra knowledge that might be worthwhile. We'll try to get the entomologist out, to the weed scientists, probably some of our brokers to come out and have some individual time with those people who might come out and then run, and this is the important part, run a route on the way back to their home, and we try to put that together. What counties do we service?
Well, we service the 14 counties that are on the eastern side of the state: Champaign, Clark, Clay, Coles, Crawford, Cumberland, Douglas, Edgar, Ford, Iroquois, Jasper, Moultrie, Piatt, and Vermilion.
So, Andrea, is it a good idea?
I think it's a great idea.
Well, that's the first time most people have heard it, so we'll see whether it works.
I'm liking it.
All right. I think we ought to try it. I think we can. Farmers have these trucks that may not be in use after we get through the harvest season all the time. They might want to be able to do something really good. It's probably quite likely that they may have a food pantry in their town. They might have a food pantry right in their home church that they can help out. So we're hopeful.
Absolutely. There's a lot of pantries out there.
Yeah. So 333-9697. Just call the radio station and ask for me if you want, if you can't remember my number. But we're kind of hopeful that there will be a few people. We don't need many. And we'll give this a shot and see if we can put something together. Next week, we're in the middle of Fun Drive. How does Eastern Illinois Food Bank raise money, by the way?
Well, we will be having our Food for Families Drive coming up on October 13th through to the end of the month. And we'll be out there asking people to donate funds to help us acquire food and get it distributed and to donate food to the food drives that are going on at the same time.
We appreciate you too being with us today. Any final word, Jim?
Well, just a reminder that tonight is the United Way kickoff at Westside Park. The Food Bank is a member of the United Way. It's a member mm-hmm. agency, and we support that organization and their efforts as they work to help people in Champaign County. That starts at 5:30 at Westside Park and lasts until approximately 8. Free food and exhibits. It'll be a good evening.
Well, hopefully everybody will come out, and that during the Fun Drive, when I said Fun Drive is going to kick off, not the Fun Drive for the radio station. There are plenty of those that will happen later, but Fun Drive for the campus, charitable Fun Drive right here on this campus, hoping to raise $1.3 million. Andrea Rundell and Jim Hires, we sure appreciate you coming in from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank.
Thanks for having us, Todd.
Have a good trip this afternoon and stay safe, and don't get too wet out there this evening. Hopefully, the rain will hold off.
We're going to have a good time regardless.
All right, thank you.
Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming Bunraku, the National Puppet Theater of Japan, followed by an afterglow performance by Brian Tairaku Ritchie on October 6th. More information is available at KrannertCenter.com.
Marker Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon, and in studio with us this afternoon is WILL and, but more importantly, the music director for the Prairie Ensemble. His name, Kevin Kelly. Thanks for waiting patiently, Kevin, this afternoon. We appreciate you being with us.
Well, I'm glad that you could have me here.
I take it you probably brought some music along with you this afternoon that we might want to listen to, and then you're going to tell us a little bit about Prairie Ensemble?
Yeah, I brought a couple of things that we can listen to.
Tell me first what Prairie Ensemble is.
The Prairie Ensemble is a small chamber orchestra most of the time. And I put it that way because for two reasons. One is that the average concert has us in our full orchestral mode and usually in smaller groups as well on the same concert. And the second reason is that this first concert of our season, which is this Friday evening, has us only in smaller mode. And that in itself makes a little twist because our program is called Miniature Mahler. And for anybody who knows anything about Gustav Mahler's music, it's usually really big symphonies for huge orchestras. Well, I just said it's going to be a small subset of our small orchestras. That makes it a little bit of a twist. Otherwise, going back to your question, what are we? We are an orchestra that tries to make the whole classical music experience perhaps a little less stuffy than it sometimes seems to some people, a little more casual, maybe a little more fun, a few more elements to the average concert, including halftime instead of intermission. So there's always a little halftime musical surprise, as well as whatever the program says is on that.
Where will you be Friday evening this week?
We will be this week at University Place Christian Church, which is at the corner of Springfield Avenue and Wright Street in Champaign. It's on Wright Street, just north of Springfield.
You primarily play in churches, don't you?
We play almost exclusively in churches.
Why?
a couple reasons. We would love to play in the Krannert Center, but their policies don't allow pretty much community groups to go in there unless you're on one of their marquee series or some mm-hmm. other series. And so that being said, the probably the best other concert halls in town are churches. And some of them are really remarkably good acoustically. And so we've figured out which ones those are and also the ones that will fit us because even some of the biggest places won't quite accommodate a full string section of an orchestra the way their setup is configured. So we've figured out which ones will fit us, which ones sound good, which ones are wheelchair accessible, and which ones will be happy to have us there, and which ones have parking.
parking.
So you put it all together, and that's how we've come up with our places.
And then this Friday evening, you'll have a soprano with you as well?
We will. She's going to be on the end of the Mahler Symphony. It's Mahler Symphony number 4. And the first four of his symphonies were in one way or another based on some of his own orchestral songs. This one, perhaps more so than most, the final movement is one of his orchestral songs. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. And all the other movements are in some way, which are just purely instrumental, are based on it. And there's a whole, all kinds of absurdly complicated explanations we go into there that I'm not about to. But Desiree Hassler is the soprano. She's absolutely wonderful. She's going to be singing the role of Musetta in the University of Illinois opera production of La Boheme coming up later in October, I believe. And she sang the Mozart C minor Mass with us in last February.
And you have music for us to listen to this afternoon?
Yeah, I think we have queued up the very beginning of the full orchestra version of the Mahler Fourth Symphony to give you an idea of what we're reducing from.
So tell me what we were hearing.
Well, that was the opening of Mahler's Fourth Symphony. And it's Mahler's – well, I read one source that said that in some way or another all of Mahler's music is in search of heaven or in search of – the infinity almost in one way or another. His music was about his own life, but it was also about nature. It was also about the emotional and spiritual upheaval of his own life and also of life in general. This one, as I said, is sort of based on that song that comes at the end, which is called The Heavenly Life. And heaven in its almost childlike vision, as is described in that particular song. And so that opened with some sleigh bells, which was meant to be sort of humorous, actually. And then he comes in with this wonderful little tune. But then throughout the symphony, you sometimes have a peaceful vision of heaven. And sometimes you have the sort of music where if you were in heaven and very happy, as one assumes one would be, but now and then you're remembering life on earth, which isn't always so great. In various ways. Sometimes it's nostalgic one, sometimes it's very sad, sometimes it's really full of turmoil. And all of this is reflected in different ways in this symphony. All of Mahler's symphonies are like an entire world unto themselves. And he really intended it to be that.
So you're going to take something that represents an entire world and infinity and shrink it down.
Right. Instead of about
be quite the task.
Now, it's all the music is the same. So the 50 minutes, everything that goes on in the 50 minutes is the same. But instead of about 100 players, we're doing it with 13. And this is an arrangement that was made by a fellow named Erwin Stein in the 1920s for a group that was headed by another composer named Arnold Schoenberg, called it the Society for Contemporary Musical Performance. For private musical performance. And it was a bunch of people who just got together and did these arrangements of usually very big pieces that you could put on in a small space for their own enjoyment. Nobody else was invited. No critics were allowed. Nobody was allowed to pass judgment on the music. It was just a matter of getting it played and giving other people a chance to hear it.
So no critics allowed Friday night, too?
Well, I actually hope that we might have one there because we'd love to have a review in the paper because I think it's going to be really good.
All right. And if people want to come, it's not terribly expensive to come. They need to call.
Yeah, it's good to call. Well, you can call our phone number, which is 355-9077. You can also go on our website, which is prairieensemble.org, or you can just show up at the door. There's generally tickets available at the door. I should say that our program just has two official pieces on it. We start it with a Mozart Serenade for Winds. Mozart and Mahler both adopted Viennese composers. They both born nearby, ended up in Vienna. And so we have our halftime surprise, as I mentioned, and I thought I'd spill the beans on the surprise because somebody might be interested just to – this might sort of season the thing a little bit better. We're going to do some music by the quintessential Viennese composer and one of his colleagues, Johann Strauss, one of his waltzes. And also I think we're doing a polka by one of the other Viennese composers of his day, and those are always a lot of fun.
So the Friday night concert kicks off at 7:30, but you need to be in the building by about 7 o'clock or so?
Well, if you want to hear me talk more in depth, particularly about Mahler and mm-hmm. some of he's a very interesting person, then I'll be doing that at 7, and the concert proper starts at 7:30.
And you do give some commentary throughout the evening, is that right?
Yeah, a little bit. And there's only those few pieces, so there won't. I do some of that in part to cover up all the you know, when we have to change a little setup. Well, we don't really have to do that, but I will talk a little bit about things that are going on. But mostly for this concert, you'll get that at 7 o'clock.
And tickets are $16 for adult, 65 and over, at $13 students or and children? Or
it's 16 for sort of general adult, 13 for seniors, but only $6 for students.
You know, students, including those on campus here?
If you got a student ID.
That's
or,
a good
or
deal.
Or appear to be under 18.
Well, I don't know whether I can pass for that or not.
No comment, Todd.
Hasn't been all that kind completely to me, so I bet I don't pass for that. This is just one in a series of concerts that you hold. There's a whole season for the Prairie Ensemble. When's the season run?
Well, this is our first of four concerts. Our second one will be in November, the first, an All-American program. Our third one will be an all-operatic excerpt program in February, and then our last one that includes Beethoven's Violin Concerto will be next April.
Well, now I have to ask you about the November 1st one. You said an all-American program, but it's called the Jewish Connection?
It's an all-Jewish-American program.
And there you
go. The fourth, Gershwin, Bernstein, and Copland, and then actually a North American, a Canadian composer, who you will never have heard of. But if you know or like klezmer music, you will like that piece because it's a concerto for klezmer band and orchestra. But that's for another conversation.
All right. Well, we appreciate you being with us this afternoon, and best of luck Friday night.
Thanks very much.
All right. Kevin Kelly is the music director for the Prairie Ensemble. You can see Kevin in action this Friday night starting at 7 o'clock at the University Place Christian Church on Wright Street, right here in Champaign. $16 for adults, $13 for seniors. And if you're a student with an ID, just $6. Good luck on Friday night, Kevin.
Thanks a lot.
Let's take a look now as we come up on the top of the hour, just about a minute and a half away from the top of the hour here. You're listening to WILL. Ed Kieser's forecast for the two-state region looks like this. For tonight in northwestern Illinois, it'll be mostly cloudy, some scattered showers during the evening hours, then becoming partly cloudy after midnight. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, scattered showers and thunderstorms. Lows will range from 47 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to 70 in the far southern part of Indiana. This just issued severe thunderstorm watch is in effect until 10 o'clock for the following locations this evening. Illinois counties include Iroquois, Kankakee, Ford, and those three counties are in the WILL immediate listening area. Once again, there is a thunderstorm watch in effect until 10 o'clock for the following locations. Illinois counties include Ford, Iroquois, and Kankakee in the state of Illinois. You're listening to WILL Urbana. This is a broadcasting service of the University of Illinois. At 3 o'clock straight up, we'll join the world. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for The World comes from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance, private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.